Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Really pleased to have back today Tova Martin. She's a perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener, accredited as an organic land care professional. She's the author of many gardening books, a horticulture industry veteran, a speaker, and a trainer. Always great to have her back. And today we're going to talk with her about indoor gardening and also talk about any gardening question that you might have. So I hope you'll join in. So do you like to garden maybe inside during the winter? Would you like to help or like some help in keeping an outside plant healthy until spring? Join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tova Martin with us by phone. Tova, hi. Thanks for joining us again. Good to talk with you.
Good morning. Well, actually, afternoon here, Larry.
That's right. We're an hour different.
Yeah.
I have to congratulate you right off the bat because I know that you won a gold medal from Garden Communicators for 2019 for your book, The Garden in Every Sense and Season.
Well, thank you.
Wonderful.
It was an honor. It was such an honor to have my peers wrote the book in. That was just wonderful. And the whole project was incredible project of going through the year and really plugging in each layer of senses in my garden. But at this time of year, I start bringing it indoors. And my little secret, Larry, is that I bring a lot of my plants from outdoors, garden plants into the house, like heucheras and tiarellas and, you know, all those. Did you ever buy plants and you didn't have enough time to get them in the garden?
Yep.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I've got a Daphne like that. And you know what? I'm loving it as a house plant.
And is it easy to keep it as a house plant?
It is. You know, my home is a little bit chilly, I have to admit, but, you know, because it's an older home. But I find that, you know, if you place things close to the window, they do even better. And it's amazing how they transition well inside.
Yeah, I've had some pretty good luck myself, especially for me, these south-facing, I've got some good south-facing windows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right up against the south-facing windows, and the windows are—they're good windows, so they don't freeze up or anything. And the plant, you know, limey seems to like it a lot.
Your citrus, your lime citrus.
Limey loves it.
Well, guess what I'm growing this year, Larry?
What?
I am growing now. I never tried this before. It's going really well. I did. You know how you? I'm the garden gal in town. So I do the planters in front of the library, and I had these beautiful ornamental tender grasses in the containers, and they look so beautiful. I didn't want them to just freeze and die, and so I adopted them into my house. It's like a meadow in one of my windows.
Oh, you have to send me a photo of that.
You know Einstein, my little kitty.
Yeah.
Well, he goes every time he walks by. He brushes against it, and you just see this big grin on his face. He's the happiest kitty on the block. I've got to tell you.
Well, if he's swiping away at it, he's probably keeping those stems stronger. You know.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I know people who, when they walk by their plants, they give them a little brush.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to keep
those
stems.
The plants seem to like it. He likes it.
And he doesn't eat it.
No, he doesn't. He wipes, he rubs his, you know how kitties love to wipe their face against things.
Yeah.
He does that all the time. And he looks up at me with this big face full of, you know, of grass as I walk by. But he sits there next to it, the proudest lion in the house. But it's such a good idea. And, you know, it gives you the sense of your garden inside. It's like, you know, you don't get any separation anxiety.
You are undoubtedly correct on that.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, here we are talking about our own plants, and there's all kinds of people who would like to visit with you.
Oh, wonderful.
And so I'm going to quit talking about us and turn to Keith in Green Bay first. Hi, Keith. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
I think it's an Aurelia. I'm not sure what variety. It kind of looks like a miniature tree. It's got a very kind of a lacy cut leaf, ferny kind of a leaf.
I know exactly what you mean.
Okay. And I have it in a west, southwest kind of facing window. But for the last couple of weeks, it's like the end branches are turning yellow.
Ooh.
And I'm careful about watering, not overwatering.
Uh-huh.
But it's not doing well since the weather changed. I don't put it out during the summer. It always gets in the same place. But all of a sudden, it's like turning yellow. And it's one of these plants where it's been as tall as 3 feet, and I cut it back to encourage the growth from the trunk. But it just not seem to be doing well.
Keith, can you tell me what source of heat, how do you heat your house?
It's a hot air, forced air.
Okay. It's not gas or anything like that.
No.
Can you tell me, and sometimes these things happen when, you know, furnaces start really going on strong. Is there a heat vent right near the plant?
There's a heat vent in the ceiling, probably 6 feet away.
Okay, so it's not underneath it.
Right now the heat is on, and I can see the leaves kind of quivering a little bit in the airflow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It might be a little dry for that plant. They're quite indestructible type of plants. But it sounds like one more question: Are you? How about the container you have it in? Does it have good drainage?
It has good drainage. It's in a clay pot.
Okay.
And I have like sphagnum moss, Spanish moss on the top, so it doesn't dry out too quickly.
Hmm. Okay. So many containers nowadays, I've noticed, don't have great drainage, and that's an issue often. Sometimes they have no drainage at all. But as long as you have a drainage hole, you're probably okay. It might just be the furnace going on a lot with the, you know, now that the weather's changed, and the plant might just be acclimating to that.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, because it started a couple of weeks ago, and the furnace probably went on 3 or 4 weeks ago because we had a real cold snap early. And I'm thinking, I'd leave it go for a while and just see what happens, because, you know, that often happens to houseplants, as you were saying. You know, they lose some leaves to begin with, they turn yellow, and then eventually some new ones start coming back.
As long as you might also check, make sure that it isn't too pot-bound. Check the root system. Nothing wrong with, you know, pulling a plant out of the pot and seeing if the roots are, you know, just too dense in that container. There's nothing wrong with that. And checking it out and repotting it if necessary. But I'm thinking, Larry and I are thinking that it's probably the heat, you know, and it'll acclimate itself.
So keep watching it, Keith. Love to hear from you. Thank you so much for calling. Toby in Superior will go to you next. Hi, Toby.
Hi, how you doing, Larry?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been trying to find the perfect mulch. I've been spending my entire adult life pulling weeds out of my garden. I've tried, you name it, I've tried it, and nothing seems to really work very well.
Well, Toby, you know, there's a trend nowadays, and that is toward what we're calling, you know, like ground cover plants, using plants as mulch. And it's kind of a different look in gardening, but I found it really works. Doing things like planting lamb's ears or some sort of creeping plant, like sedum, there's some wonderful creeping sedums, or lady's mantle, or something like that, underneath plants, and using that as, you know, the plant itself as mulch. And they, you know, they fill in, and they look great, and you plant them, and that's it. That's your the one-time expense.
And do you walk on them then? And, you know, when you're, you know, here's Toby wants to get his carrots or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to walk through that.
He's got to walk through. Oh, so this is a vegetable garden, is it, Toby?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a vegetable garden. See, that's okay. That's what I thought.
Okay. Okay, so it's a vegetable garden. You know, you can still combine plants, like I've seen it done with parsley a lot, you know, like parsley and cabbage and that sort of thing, putting them together in like a row and then, you know, doing it that way. On the vegetable garden, you know, there's lots of different mulches. I think that straw and that sort of thing is the most common in our area.
You know what I do? I put down a newspaper, and on top of the newspaper, I put chopped leaves.
Have you, Larry, in your area, is there something, and I just heard about this recently, it's called ram board. Have you heard of that? Like cardboard, but it's in a
bowl. Yes. Oh, yes, 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 I have.
And you know, they were really talking that up a storm at a recent symposium I was at. I haven't tried it yet, but the people who had couldn't say enough great things about it.
And what is it about it? What's it like?
Well, it's like newspaper, but it's one roll that you roll out, and then you put the, you know, something on top of it, like you know, like ground up leaves or something like that, and it serves, you know, it actually is like a weed barrier.
And does it then disintegrate over time, or
it does?
And then you put a new batch down the next year.
You know, the mulch, you've suppressed a bunch of weeds. So the newspaper, the mulch then kind of kicks in and really does. You put more mulch on top,
right?
But you suppress the leaves and suppress the weeds in the original that were originally weed seeds that were there.
Well, that would be easier. I happen to get newspaper.
They often
delivery.
Do like a lasagna type thing on it then.
And it's called, what is it again? It's called
ram board, like a sheep, you know, a male sheep, ram board. And I looked it up, and you can get it almost, you know, at most.
Anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't tried it yet, but they were doing it, again, like a lasagna. The next year they would put another layer and more leaves on top, and the thing below would have disintegrated.
Yeah. Toby, that may be worth a try. Especially if you're sick of weeds, that may be well worth a try. And here's Jill or Dave put up a picture of ram board on our page, on our WPR.org page. And yeah, it's probably kind of like newspaper, except it's in a roll and it'd be easier to lay out. Yeah, there we go. Toby, good luck. Give that a try. Appreciate your call. We'll take some more callers in just a minute. I want to remind you, our guest today is Tova Marchin. Her latest book is called The Garden in Every Sense and Season, and it was a gold medal winner from Garden Communicators for 2019. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at indoor gardening today, but we're taking some outdoor gardening questions as well with our guest, Tova Martin. She is a perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener, and as I said, her latest book is called The Garden in Every Sense and Season. Always fun to have her with us. You can join in. There's still an open line at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Louise in Wauwatosa has something for us. Hi, Louise.
Hi, Larry. I do have an outdoor plant question. It is about endless summer hydrangeas. Do I let those stalks stand over the winter, or should I cut them back? This year, I fertilized lightly with Milorganite in the spring, but I had hardly any blooms. What is your suggestion on how to treat those?
You do have to leave those stems. I know, they're unsightly. and they look very sad for a little while, but with the endless summer, even though they say that they bloom on new wood, I haven't really found that to be the case in my case. And I'm zone 5 also. I found that they need to, they bloom on old wood. You have to leave those stems up and let them, you know, sprout out again, and hopefully they'll have blossoms. It really is a, winter by winter situation. If it's been a dreadful winter, you might not get blossoms the next year.
Yeah. Endless summer isn't always endless. and we've had some complaints about endless summer. So leave them up. There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Did we answer all of your questions? Oh, we lost her. Okay, we must have. Let's go to Diane in Madison. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Larry. I'm calling to find out what to do about the hostas I didn't get planted. I did bring them in, and I've been watering them a little bit. I have them in my basement and have some lights on. Can I plant them in some soil, or should I just leave them like they are?
Well, you know, enjoy them as houseplants.
They dried up.
They did dry up. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sometimes I've actually done the miniatures as houseplants, and as some nurserymen said, it couldn't be done, and I enjoyed them for a whole winter. It was wonderful. So if you can't, there's nothing wrong with potting them up, and putting them in a container. Might be a little easier to manage them. I have never actually stored them in a basement myself, but Larry, have you ever tried it?
I have never had to overwinter one, thankfully. I don't know. You'd think they'd still need to have some more sunlight than you have in most basements.
Yeah, well, if you've got lights and you've got lights near them, and there's, you can get these wonderful LED full spectrum lights nowadays that you, I screw them into. They're just a bulb, and you can screw them into what I call a task lamp, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And call them a drag lamp or whatever you want to call it. But I just screw them in, and then I screw the lamp onto the table where I've got the plants, and it acts, put it fairly close to the plant, and it works really well. So if I were you, I would pot them up. Don't go crazy with watering. Just, give them a little bit of moisture, just enough moisture to keep them alive, and wait and see whether they start coming out of dormancy. If they start sprouting up, and you can bring them up, and you can have your little garden, your little hosta garden in your window.
And they could make it to spring and then put them outside.
Yeah, get them outside as soon as you can dig in. Of course, they don't like, you know, heavy frost for sure. But
yeah, there you go, Diane. Thanks a lot for calling. Mindy in Germantown, it is your turn. Hi, Mindy.
Hello. I have kind of a weird question, I'd say. I have 300 houseplants.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what happens when you've been greenhouse manager for a few universities. So there is a mix of orchids, citrus, tea, all sorts of weird stuff. So a lot of different kinds of media. They go outside until first frost. Normally, we have a little longer warning. Unfortunately, every year I have to deal with slugs.
Oh, yeah.
An indoor slug problem.
They're in my basement. They're under LEDs. We went through the HID to fluorescent to now LEDs. They do just fine. I'm basically storing them for the winter, so the bay leaves and stuff, they are fine. However, they get chomped on, especially the orchids. And I also have dogs. I don't want to use anything particularly toxic. Your background is a little more organic than mine. Help!
You know, there's that those little slug. I've seen them advertised. They're like little closed terracotta slug traps, and they hopefully they, you know, the animal wouldn't be able to slurp it up, but if you put down beer, I guess
it can work.
Your Labrador might be a little tipsy. But if you put, you know, something in the trap like that, that you were sure, you know, wouldn't harm the animal. And I'm not sure about beer and dogs at all. I think one of those closed traps would be probably your best bet for the slugs. I've never really had slug, you know, besides that one or two slugs that you come in that you just pull off the plant, you know. I mean, the beauty of slugs is you can see their little trails, and it's not hard to find where they're hidden. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They leave a trail along the floor or whatever.
They, I guess if you put some of that, what is the little fine grains of coarse sand that go, you could put on around soil a lot of times. Why couldn't you put some of that around the pot, inside the pot, around the plant itself? Essentially, they mutilate themselves as they crawl across.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea, though. Or any type of like river stone or something like that. Do you know what I mean? That the stone, it would be beautiful. And as a matter of fact, what I do on a lot of my containers is I put pine cones. They wouldn't really mutilate themselves, but it wouldn't be easy going.
Diatomaceous earth. Keely Boltina tells me.
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
Diatomaceous earth. Okay.
I should have thought of it myself.
Well, that's a very good idea.
Yeah. So there you go. Give that a try inside the pots. I don't think that's something that the dogs are going to fool with, for sure. So give it a try, Diane. See what happens. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I'm sorry, Mindy. That was Mindy, not Diane. Kristen in Green Bay. We'll give you a chance. Let's go there. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I also have some indoor pests, except mine are fungus gnats. And I have tried the sticky yellow traps. I've tried the diluted hydrogen peroxide, and it works for a while, but then inevitably they come back, and they have killed my basil every single year, and for the past 2 years they killed my seedlings, so I want them dead by the time I plant my seeds in the spring.
I know what you mean exactly. And a lot of us, you know, have the problem, especially when you are doing the seeds, because it's primarily, Kristen, it's primarily an environmental thing that, you know, that's moist soil is what really attracts fungus gnats. And I actually, for that reason, I shy away from any soil that has vermiculite in it as part of the configuration, just because it's sticky. It sort of makes a sticky surface, and fungus gnats love that. If you can do things like that to sort of deter them. I was told that the sticky traps, you know, work for a lot of people. There is a product now, and I don't remember the name of it, that they are putting out for fungus gnats that's organic. You might check, and it's very new. It's only, that's why I don't even know the name yet. I think it came out last year. And so that's another possibility. But in general, a maintenance-wise and thing that you can do to alleviate it is your cultural practices. Try to only water the soil when it's dry, and then let it dry out again. Grow in a soil that does not, you know, that drains well. Always grow in containers that have good drainage, and that sort of thing help a lot with alleviating the problem. But again, Kristen, you're going to have, you know, when you start seedlings in the spring, you have to keep them a little moist to germinate them. So I'm with you that you have to get it under control before that.
Yeah, there's a fine line there, too, between...
Yeah.
On the moisture side of it. But that's the best we got for today, Kristen. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. And by the way, you can join in with your questions as well. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Terry emailed a photo of her one lemon on her lemon tree. The leaves look really good, but I can't tell. She wants to know if it's how to know when it's ready to eat. She said also the leaves are turning yellow and many are falling off. It's under LED light about 15 hours a day. Should she be concerned? This time of the year, I wouldn't be too concerned about the dropping leaves because I think
it's
going to...
It's the nature of the beast, unfortunately.
Yeah. And in terms of knowing, it's hard for me to see. I can't tell the size of it. She's got a nice photo of the lemon, but
sometimes they're not large enough to support that fruit. But Larry, you're the one that gave me the from my Calamundan orangey. You got limey, I've got orangey, but they really like a lot of water. They really, really do. And Larry also gave me the hint of, you know, just fertilizing. It being really generous. You know, most of my houseplants I don't fertilize from Thanksgiving, which is coming right up, until March 1st. But the orange, the citrus, that's the exception. They are really, really heavy feeders, really major hungry plants.
And in terms of the size, I don't know the size, the color, though, it looks like there may be still a touch of green on the bottom side of the lemon.
It should be yellow.
It should be yellow all the way around. If it's still got a little green on it, I'd wait till it yellows up completely. And I think you're going to be okay. There's a fair amount. I mean, you could take it off right now, but I'd let it sit if it's still. It looks like it's still got a little green on it to me. So
you can also sometimes tell from the rind, just rubbing the rind, when they're ripe, you know, they smell like
yes.
citrus, you know.
Yeah, it's got that great citrus smell.
Yeah.
Well, Cheryl in Berlin has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I have a big geranium plant that I brought in for the winter, and all of a sudden now I'm seeing all these little insects crawling on the plant, little
Ew.
Winged insects, and they're flying around the house.
Yeah, it could be fungus gnats.
Are they white, like white fly? Are they,
well,
what color
they
are
they? They look like a tiny fly.
They look like tiny flies, so they're kind of a little blacky brownish.
Yeah.
Right?
Wings and
antennas. That would probably be fungus gnats. Tell you what, take that plant and what you might want to do is cut it back sharply. It's amazing how geraniums will like to, they're like chickens. They like to molt in a way. You might want to cut it back and let it grow out again. And try Larry's, actually Kristen, I got the idea on the fungus gnats to do something similar to Larry's advice on the for the other problems. You might just take for the slugs. You might just take some sand
or diatomaceous earth.
Yeah, I haven't worked that much with diatomaceous earth, but I was thinking that if you put like something on the surface, like pebbles or something like that, it wouldn't be a surface they'd like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't like dry. They like it moist. So if the very surface of the pot is not moist, they wouldn't be happy.
Yeah.
And they, you know, you probably have to, their fungus gnats are not so difficult to get control of. I think you should try a sticky yellow trap.
I try a sticky yellow trap, and then I dry the plant out.
Yeah, yeah.
Get it dried out.
And cut it back.
Cut it back, dry
yeah.
it out, put some stones in there, and there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's take another call. Kevin in Superior up next. Hi, Kevin.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a pepper plant. Unfortunately, I don't know what the variety is, but it's a super hot pepper plant. My wife's just kind of crazy about hot peppers.
And you brought it inside?
I brought it inside because up in this area, there's not enough season to really grow this pepper proper.
Oh, okay.
And you know, I've done this in the past and didn't have a problem, but this year I've got what I believe are aphids, and I just...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I sprayed it a couple times with 7, and I, you know, it just seems that little critters come back.
Well, you know, I'm organic, so you might try, you know, unfortunately, when you use organic pesticides, you have to keep applying them. And I have pretty good luck with neem and that sort of thing on insects. But aphids are not usually hard, you know, they're easy, but they have a very fast cycle. In fact, it's really fast.
Yeah.
You've got to keep up spraying. You've got to do it like every 3 days or so. I think that's what the cycle is. But, you know, it's amazing how quickly another generation will hatch. But in general, one thing, you know, we always say when we're growing organically that if a plant is not stressed, it's less likely to fall victim to insects. So bright, bright, bright light for your pepper, because that plant, and if you're having I haven't kept up with the weather up there, but if you're having a dark autumn, and, you know, November can be deadly dull weather-wise, if you're having a dark autumn, then that plant just might not be getting enough light And that's why it's a little bit stressed and falling victim to these aphids.
Yeah, that's a possibility too, for sure. Well, Superior is right at the top of the state, and so it is getting, 10, 15 minutes less light at least than the southern part of the state gets,
yeah.
as an example.
Yeah.
So that could work.
Try supplemental light to boost your plant up. But aphids, they're pain, but they're easy to control. You can usually, if you keep applying something, you can usually get control. Also, cooler temperatures. Sometimes when the heat is blasting a lot, I find that aphids are more an issue in the spring when it's warmer than in the cooler times of year.
Yeah, that's another good point. Mm-hmm. Kevin, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Tova Martin, gardener extraordinaire. Her latest book is called The Garden in Every Sense and Season. I'm Larry Mueller. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Larry here for the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today as we visit with Tova Martin, author of many gardening books, including her latest, The Garden in Every Sense and Season, a gold medal winner in 2019 from Garden Communicators. So it's a great book. And always pleased to have her with us. Questions for her, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Tova, we had a question earlier about slugs and got an email from Paul who says that any slug bait that has iron phosphate as the active ingredient and as used outdoors can also be used indoors and won't harm pets and is organic.
Mm, good to know.
Yeah, so iron phosphate.
Thank you, Paul.
For sure. Let's take another call here. Ellen in Waupun, we'll go to you next. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a gardenia plant that I brought in from outside. This is my first year to grow it at all, and I only had one blossom on it that failed. And now it looks really healthy in the house right now, and it's in the brightest light that I can put it in. Do you have any tips for that plant?
I sure do, Ellen. Gardenia, I lecture a lot, and there's always somebody in the room that raises their hand and says, it's like confession time or something. I killed my gardenia.
Oh, boy.
There's always somebody who's, I call it my therapy session, my gardenia therapy session. They are not easy, but a lot of people can do it. The trick is, you guessed it, bright, bright, bright light. If you can give that gardenia a south-facing window, it's going to really like you. And, it's really important that you rotate the plant. You just keep turning it so that all sides of it are exposed to that light. Or, better still, if you had a bay window or light from, a corner window, light from several directions would be wonderful. Gardenias need heat, too. They keep it away from drafty windows, that sort of thing, in the winter. Heat meaning, definitely should be 65 to 70 overnight in nighttime temperatures. And then the last part of the configuration is the trickiest, given everything I've just said to you, and that's humidity. They don't like dry air. So keep it away from your wood stove. Try to give it, you know, like a pebble tray, or run a humidifier near it. They, you know, when a room is warm, it's usually dry too. So unfortunately, those are two factors that don't usually appear together. High humidity and warm temperatures are not usually linked together. So there's your challenge.
There you go. Good luck, Ellen. It's not the easiest thing in the world, for sure. Thanks.
Probably won't bloom, but you might make it through to summer, to next summer, and at which time you can put it out again.
There you go. Eric and Madison, your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Interesting question. Came back from Florida after being down there the last couple of years. Got an aloe plant, rather large one. It had like a 2-3 foot flower stalk that came out of the top, came out of the middle of it. And as those petals started to open, there was like a bunch of little teeny tiny bugs, it seemed like, all over it. What are they, and are they a problem once you move the plant inside for the winter up here in Wisconsin?
Did you say they were sticky? Because sometimes they are a little bit sticky.
I don't know if they're sticky or not.
The flower. You know, if anything that is sweet and sugary, like fungus gnats and that sort of thing, are going to be attracted to. I mean, lucky you that the aloe is blooming. That's really, you know, a wonderful achievement. But
For sure.
I don't want to say curtail it, you know. It's your triumph. you know, do you know what type of insects? Are they like little flies, like little fungus gnats?
I haven't the slightest idea. They're little, teeny, tiny, hard to even see, but you can tell they move.
And they fly around.
I don't recall seeing any fly. They just, like, are on it. On the, like, flower pod as the petals open.
Maybe they are aphids because it's, you know, that sticky sweetness. Aphids, again, are not so difficult. You could start, you know, down the line with something like Safer's insecticidal soap, and try that. Try sticky trap, a yellow sticky trap. If they're flying. If it's aphids, you best to spray it with something like you could try neem oil. That's organic, or an insecticidal soap. You could also try that and see if you can get some control. Or I hate to say it, you could cut off flowers. But
I wouldn't do that.
That's mean. Yeah. I think you need to, you know, take a bow on that, because it isn't so easy to get aloes to bloom.
There you go, Eric. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kathy in Blair, let's go to you next.
Yes.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if you had ever started pine seedlings from seeds.
You know, I haven't, but they come up in my garden. They come up in my garden, and I've known, you know, friends that do it. As I understand it, it's not so hard.
Would the seeds need a cold period? Is that maybe that's why they come up in the garden?
I think you probably need to, vernalize them. I think Larry's got a really good point there that they, you know, if you could plant them in somewhere and then tuck it outside, you know, some people put them in coal frames or something like that where they're protected, and just, you know, let them go through a period of cold, then that's probably really necessary for your pine seedlings.
And thank you, Kathy, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in. Excuse me. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Got an email from Grant to ask if we've ever grown a vegetable called Celtus, and if so, could you grow it successfully in Wisconsin? I've known it as Chinese lettuce. Celtus is, I think he adds that it's also called stem lettuce or celery lettuce or asparagus lettuce, and it's grown for its stem and or its leaves. Used as a vegetable and very popular in China and Taiwan.
I'm trying to get a picture up here of the actual plant. Oh, I do see it. It looks, and they are calling it Celtus. I put it in the stem lettuce, and it looks like it's delicious.
Yeah.
And a great storage thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think if what you probably have to do is take a look at the seed bag, the seed container.
The packet, yeah.
The packet, and look and see what the growing days, how many days it takes to grow. So it might work in some areas of Wisconsin and not in others, depending on the time it takes from seed to eating.
Harvest, yeah, yeah. And some of those, I've been growing, Larry, I've been growing all kinds of things indoors, like pak choy and mustard, you know, some of the milder mustards, and I have a lettuce even that I'm growing indoors because that's a low light plant, and and they're doing really well, and it gives me something to eat over the winter, which I'm so grateful for. You know, just so one little green makes all the difference.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know if it'd be worth a try to grow it indoors because of the root.
Started indoors, maybe. How about
you
that?
Could start it in, it started indoors, but I take a look at the seed packet and see what the growing days are for it, because you know, I think since it's a favorite in China, I mean, I'm looking, trying to think of their zones. Certain zones of theirs are the same as ours. So if it's a common vegetable there, I would think it'd be a common. It would be easy enough to grow, and just something that's new that people haven't tried. So here's my advice, Grant. I'd get some and try it out. You know what? We always talk about how great experimenters gardeners are.
Here's what I'm seeing, Larry. It's saying that it's a cool season crop, so it's 90 days. But I guess the trick is, which wouldn't be so hard in Wisconsin.
No.
90 cool days. So you don't want to get it into, like, August heat. But if you can do it up front or back it, you know, into autumn, you got yourself a good harvest possibility.
Yeah, why not?
90 days is not bad.
No, it isn't. And if you, so September, October, November, you might be able to get on the back end. If you cheated into maybe the last part of August to plant, or plant in August, and then you've got September and October, and November, you know, in November it's getting kind of...
Yeah.
Especially this year. We had terrible month of November. We were getting cold and bad temperatures.
I saw that.
Early on... And it was nasty. Fiddle leaf figs are getting to be quite popular. Are they popular out where you are?
Figs?
Fiddle leaf figs.
Oh, fiddle leaf figs. Oh yes, they're like omnipresent. I as houseplants. Yes, everybody's growing them, and you know, I don't know what can I say nice.
You're not a fan.
Well, they get the brown leaf edges.
Yeah.
You know, it which is not a pretty picture. And I'm a big proponent of, if it doesn't look wonderful, it's not allowed in my house. You know, I like my houseplants to look beautiful from top to toe. And those brown leaf edges do not make me happy.
Well, on that happy note, or unhappy note, my goodness. Our guest today is Tova Martin, perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener, accredited as an organic land care professional. And her latest books, many books, but the latest one is The Garden in Every Sense and Season. Beautiful book, wonderful book. And it's great to have Tova with us for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and great to have back Tova Martin, perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener. She is accredited as an organic land care professional, author of many gardening books. She's a horticulture industry veteran, a speaker and trainer, so always fun to have her come by. Her latest book is The Garden in Every Sense and Season. Came out in 2019, so, and she won a gold medal for it. So there you go. Have a plant question. I hope you'll join in. Maybe what's your favorite inside plant at this time of the year? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tova, do you think it seems to me that houseplants are, you know, they go, you know, in popularity, they kind of go up and they go down sometimes over time. It seems like we're on an upswing for houseplants.
Absolutely. And do you blame us? I mean, we've got a lot of downtime there when we can't get out into the garden. And, you know, it makes, for me, you too, with Limey, doesn't it make all the difference? Isn't it like therapeutic?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Any new favorites for you?
Oh gosh, yes. I was talking to you earlier about those grasses in my little savanna in my savanna indoors, but I love those. But I also have a really nice Irish moss, that great big huge plant. It is. I go by and I pet it. I love plants that I can, you know, touch. I guess, you know, you just hit upon a little tangent that I go on when I set up. And when I do my garden indoors, I make it like a garden indoors.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I think about how each pot, you know, the color of the pot goes with the plant and goes with the other colors of the pots. And I really design it. I do, you know, I think about the elements of design, like you should have something that's low beside something that's taller, and something, things of different texture. I really try to design it. So much fun. It's so much fun. What else do you have to do in the middle of the winter?
Well, we can look at your book. That's one thing. It is fun to look at your book.
Well, thank you.
Oh, man. Well, James in Kenosha has a question. Let's go there. James, hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What can we do for you?
I have a problem with asparagus. I knew that this was a long-term project. I planted it, I think, 3, maybe 4 seasons ago. It's coming back every year. I planted it in multiple spots around the yard because I didn't know where it would thrive. The problem is I get very large asparagus plants, but they don't increase in number.
Mm. So in other words, they aren't making more, they aren't, you know, runnering. And that takes a little while.
Yeah, it's been 3 years. I only get two or three plants per location, and I just let them go. They get 7 feet tall. I mean, they become...
Yeah. It sounds like they're happy. I mean, James, I'm a little bit... I've got asparagus envy because we had something called crown rot with ours and had to start all over again, and I did it in raised beds so they wouldn't get the crown rot. But as far as them runnering, it does, you know, I know from experience that it takes a little while for that to happen. And are you not, you know, you're supposed to kind of let them gather steam for a few years and not harvest them. Are you doing that?
Yes, I haven't. I think that this past summer was our third year.
Okay, and you're letting them, you know, you're not cutting them until they start really, you know, becoming thick stalks.
We haven't cut them at all.
Okay, good. Well, I think it's just a patience thing. Larry, your thoughts?
How many plants are you putting in? You know, you've got them in different areas. Are you putting a number of plants in different areas or...
You know, it's been a while ago, perhaps it was the stock that I began with. I think I picked them off of a shelf on the back of a garden store, but maybe two or three, I guess, would they be rhizomes or two or three roots?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, usually they come in like bundles of like 25, don't they?
Yeah, they usually do. And there's some asparagus varieties that do much better. So you don't really know, were these all males or were they?
I don't know that.
I'm loving, what do they call it? Jersey Night, I think it's called. That's my favorite because it's crown rot resistant. So I became a total convert on that.
It might be worth giving it, try a new variety in an area and see how that goes. It may be the variety, if you kind of got it off the back counter of the store, maybe it's just not one that's perfect for our growing conditions. Kenosha, you shouldn't have any trouble growing asparagus really well and it doing really well in Kenosha, Wisconsin, for sure. So I might experiment a bit with a different variety and see what you get. You don't have to take it all out, but I'd take an area or two out and try it again with something new. And there are, as I say, there's a lot of good ones. Maybe try Jersey Night.
Yeah,
it's good tasting.
Jersey Night is a really good one.
Yeah, it's very tasty, very tasty. Thanks, James. Appreciate it. Let's go to Susan in Waukesha. Hi, Susan.
Hello, good morning to you, or afternoon, I guess.
Good afternoon.
And I have an aloe plant that is over 100 years old from my mom.
Wow.
Oh, good for you.
3 feet across with about 22 separate little spidery planty things on it. And it has black spot on it. And it's just, you're in there, and it's sort of like it's even indented. And it just is showing up all over, not on each plant. But I've been afraid to share the aloe plant because I'm not sure what this is or how to treat it.
Now, when you water, do you water just the soil or do you spray the plant?
I do not spray the plant.
Okay. I mean, I have had that happen, but it's usually me watering incorrectly. I got moisture on the aloe leaves or whatever you want, those succulent stems. And I guess, all I can think of is like an environmental thing, like keep it less moist and let it dry out more between waterings. You might, you know, want to give it a little bit of a real dry out cycle on that, because they can take it because they're succulents and adapted to regions with really low moisture. How about your house? Is it in like a bathroom or very moist environment?
It's in a sunroom, and it is in the southeast corner, and it has a palm tree next to it that sort of shades it from severe, but it's right in the middle of the sun. It usually, you know, it's 100 years old. I mean,
wow.
And it's had like 16 blossoms that have come up out of it.
Wow. But, wow, it sounds gorgeous. Gorgeous. I don't know that much about fungicides to suggest, something that you might do to arrest that problem. But because I haven't ever had any bacterial issues, but it does sound like, you know, it might be just for some reason, again, you know, maybe not enough light in this season.
I was trying to think if there could have been an insect kind of issue with it.
So very few insects get on succulents.
I know.
Yeah. It's usually mealybug, and doesn't sound like what she's got at all.
One thing you might do, Susan, is if you've got it right now, is take some close-up photos of it, and you can send the photos to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. It's Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, UW-Madison. Brian Huddleston would be able to take a look at it and might have an idea of what it is, because he if there's something going on in the state, he kind of knows about it, because they all the problems eventually wind up at his shop at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. And if you've got some, maybe a general photo of the plant and then a real close-up of the leaf itself, he might be able to help.
Yeah, and Susan, you might, after you've done that just wipe that off with like a handkerchief or something like that to give it a fresh start. I mean, a 100-year-old plant, boy, the stakes are high.
Yeah, you aren't kidding there.
Yeah.
But and even, well, you could also mail something in, but do the photo thing with your cell phone first and email that to Brian and see what he thinks. He may send, can you send me a leaf or something? He may have to take a closer look, but he might also have already come in contact with it. And, it'd take you a minute or two is all to take the photo and send it in. So give that a shot. Thank you very much. Mark in Delavan, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you, Larry?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, I absolutely love your show and try not to miss it each and every day. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Larry, I've got a hibiscus bush. And what we do is we bring it outside on the porch during the summertime, and we get a number of flowers, that beautiful red flowers. And in the wintertime, we swing it back inside, put it in what we call our sunroom, and I place it in the southeast corner and try to water it about every other day. And I'm just wondering, it appears as if the leaves are turning a little yellow. If I may have overwatered it, or,
too much water, probably, part of it. Part of it may be adjusting to the light condition again, Mark.
Okay.
I think Larry's got a really good point on the light condition and adjustment. Hibiscus, will often turn yellow and drop leaves. If it hadn't happened to you before, you're lucky. I find that hibiscus are very sensitive to any type of gas, cooking, heat, yeah. Anything having to do with gas will make them drop foliage very rapidly.
Okay.
So that can be an issue. But they tend to not like the transition. The good news is that they are very forgiving after they do, you know, they throw a little fit. And then they recover. We like you know, I wish they'd skip the histrionics, but I like a plant that's forgiving and snaps out of it, which is a good thing. So the, you know, you often, if you don't give up hope, you often find little leaves starting, you know, young leaves starting again.
Gotcha. Well, this is the second year that we've had it out, and or brought it in, beg your pardon. And I think it might be confusing the seasons, because in the wintertime, I mean around Christmas time, it blooms like crazy. And,
wow.
Yeah,
wow.
We do.
You must have
flowers.
Really good light. Really good light.
Well, yes. I mentioned sunroom, and it's virtually just that, short of a... you know, a clear top on that part of the house. She does get plenty of sun for sure.
Wow. Well, I think we've gone as far as we can with this one, Dova.
I do, but I think you'll find that it will, you know, yeah. It will recover.
It's going to recover. It will. Thank you,
don't
Mark.
Don't give up hope.
Yeah. Do not give up hope. Well, Tova, you know what? It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
This is the height of my holiday gift to myself. and I just love doing this show and talking to my friends in Wisconsin, which I figure are probably some of the best indoor gardens, certainly some of the most energetic and indoor gardeners that just do it. Thank you.
Thanks, Tova. Tova Martin, our guest. Her latest book is called The Garden in Every Sense and Season. I always have a wonderful time talking with her, and I hope you had a wonderful time hearing from her. We always enjoy gardens. And speaking of enjoying gardens, even during the cold winter months, Wisconsin botanical gardens around the state are about to light up for the season. Here's a few worth checking out.
Holiday light displays in Wisconsin just keep getting bigger and better. And some of the best are located in our botanical gardens. And since we are all about gardens, we thought we'd highlight a few on this edition of Time Out Wisconsin. Talking to me from the Green Bay Botanical Garden is Dave Barco. He is the facilities and maintenance coordinator, and he's in charge of setting up the WPS Garden of Lights every year. The display at the garden has been around since 1997, and this year, the magic starts on November 29th. Thanks so much for joining us, Dave. I know that you are super busy putting on the final touches of this year's display. When did you actually start putting it up?
We start in the first week in October. Takes us about 7 weeks to set up, so we are into our seventh week right now.
Oh, my gosh. So have you ever sat down and figured out how many hours it takes to put all those lights up?
For me, it takes some time. I usually do about 500 hours a year with the light show.
Wow. That's a lot. Do you have help, though?
Yes, we have. I have a couple coworkers that help me out, and then we have a great group of volunteers. There's about 10 to 15 that come throughout the week, and they help me whenever I need help, and they're wonderful guys and gals, and I depend a lot on them.
So talk a little bit about what people can expect to see when they go to the gardens.
Well, we're a botanical garden, so everything is botanical themed.
Okay.
A garden themed, so we try to bring what you would see in the summertime and bring that into lights.
Now, who designs your shows?
I do. Cool. I, so example, few years back, we had koi fish that was donated to us.
Uh-huh.
And people absolutely loved the koi fish. They were huge, and the kids loved them and everything. And so I wanted to bring that into light. So we have a display called Under the Pond, and it's got these large, very large koi fish along with some seaweed, and there's a turtle in there, and there's things that water flowing through it and stuff like that, and people absolutely love it.
Oh, I can see why. So tell me, first thing that came to my mind is how much does your electric bill go up every year?
You know, we're pretty much all LEDs now. We're 99% LEDs. So
okay, that
makes a big
difference.
Our electric bill is not that bad compared to what it used to be 10 years ago when we were doing all incandescents. So it's relatively inexpensive.
So what are some of the problems that you have, you know, run into over the years when you're putting up the display? Weather, I'm assuming?
Yes. Well, Mother Nature hasn't been very kind to us this year.
So no.
We had, in Green Bay here, we've had over 12 inches of snow in October and November, and it's been very cold.
Yes.
We've had single digits in the morning, so our volunteers truck through it, and we get it done. So Mother Nature this year has been a little challenging.
And what's your favorite part of the display this year?
This year, we got a new one called Butterflies in Motion. And that is also a spinoff from what we had over the summer. We had a Butterflies in Bloom display where people could come walk through a butterfly house. And so I wondered, well, let's create lights with that. So that's what we did. We created a little miniature greenhouse people can walk through, and we have got chrysalis, and we've got these butterflies that are actually in motion now. We've gotten motors with them, and we got mechanical wings, so the butterflies are actually moving, and you're able to walk through this butterfly house.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And just quickly, there are a few other things to do besides just look at the lights, aren't there?
Sure. One of the things we have a horse-drawn wagon rides. Those are available every single night. And inside there's Santa Claus, there's food, there's a railroad display, a really nice railroad display.
Okay, well, great. Well, thank you again, Dave. Get back out at it because we want it to be perfect.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Again, the fun starts the day after Thanksgiving. You can find out more about the Green Bay Botanical Garden and the WPS Garden of Lights by going to gbbg.org. Other Botanical Garden holiday light displays can be found at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. And in Milwaukee, you can drive through the light display at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Whitnall Park. This is just a very few of the many events taking place around the state in the next few weeks. If you have an event you'd like to tell us about, email us at timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org. And find links to the events we talked about today at wpr.org/timeout. I'm Jill Nadeau. Until next month, get out and explore, dream, and discover.
Tell you what, those holiday light displays are absolutely wonderful. I've had a chance to see many of them around the state and take advantage of it. It was really fun to hear about them. Maybe you have an event you'd like to suggest for our Time Out Wisconsin segment. We'd love to hear from you, as Jill said. Send us an email at timeoutwisconsin@wpr.org. And we'll have more for you next month. Until then, I hope you enjoy taking time out to explore Wisconsin. And thank you so much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.